As part of the afternoon session is entirely devoted to logarithmic conformal field theory. So what I'd like to try in this talk is to explain what we nowadays have started to understand a little bit better, and in turn what we entirely don't understand about this species of conformal field theory. So somehow boasting title, the message. The point is that forget about this logarithmic stuff. We are even not sure whether logarithms are really the indication of what's going on. What I would like to say is that there are conformal field theories which have a much more complicated representation structure than what you know as ordinary rational conformal field theory. What happens is that you get representations which are indecomposable, and some people working on supergroups know that this can happen. And I have given here a few systems where we are now very sure that actually we have to include this particular indecomposable representations into the spectrum of a theory. We cannot just remove them, get a smaller theory, which is then an ordinary one. So these are ghost systems on Riemann surfaces, and a member of that is the C equals minus 2 theory, where logarithmic CFT was first discovered. It's certain Westermini-Witten models at, for example, level 0, or at certain fractional level like minus 4 over 3. Westermini-Witten models of supergroups were actually, I think, to my knowledge, the first explicit indecomposable structures were discovered. Certain C equals 0 theories, I mean any non-trivial C equals 0 theory, which is not just a tensor product out of other parts adding up to C equals 0, seem to have at least a very involved indecomposable structure. And here in brackets, we have Westermini-Witten models of non-compact groups. It's in brackets because we know indecomposable structures exist, but what we don't know is whether they are necessary, whether we have to include them, or whether we can define the theory on loop level or higher genus level without them. So to set up a little bit of my notation, I tell you what an indecomposable representation is. In the simplest cases, that you have some kind of highest weight state, such we have an eigenvalue of L0, and you have all the positive modes vanish. And instead of that, you have a Jordan block with several highest weight states, which all have, so to say, the same quantum numbers with respect to the chiral symmetry algebra. Here it's just the Virasoro algebra. But L0 acts non-diagonally. It moves you from the cave element of this Jordan cell down one step. I mean, you can always, if you have an indecomposable structure, choose this Jordan form. In the symbols case, we can take all the states to be highest weight states in the sense that the positive modes of the Virasoro algebra vanish. However, it seems that this is a special case and not the generic one case which happens. I will come back to that point. Also, one can think of defining indecomposable structures with respect to current algebras or extended chiral symmetry algebras. But in this talk, I will restrict myself to the Virasoro algebra because otherwise the formulae get very messy. And also, if I talk about fields instead of the states, I will use a notation indicating the conformal weight and, so to say, the level within the Jordan block in this way. So what you all know is that if you do something like ordinary conformal field theory and you have something like differential equations due to local symmetries, also known as null fields, it can happen that this differential equation degenerate, and that is exactly what was the first observation by Gurari in 1903, that this C equals minus 2, which is the central charge of a ghost system with spin 1 and 0. This happens if you consider a state with conformal weight minus 1 over 8. And if you consider the four-point function, I mean, it has, of course, a standard form and a function which depends on the crossing ratio only. And that function is determined by a hypergeometric differential equation which turns out, due to the null vector of level 2, which turns out not to have two power series solutions. So what happens is, that's all well known, that you get one block which has, of course, a good expansion, and you get another conformal block which you can write like this. That means it has a good expansion in another region of your coordinate patches, or you can rewrite it as an expansion in X with a logarithm here, and another more generalized hybrid geometric function, if you wish, which is regular. So, I mean, that's not very, nothing really worse, bad, because, I mean, X is a dimensionless quantity, so no reason to worry about the logarithm. The only point is that the second conformal block implies, by considering crossing symmetry and conformal covariance on the level of operator products, that the OPE, which gives the second block, must have this form. And here you get a logarithm which coordinates, so there should actually be some scale involved, and you get another field of conformal weight zero in this case, so this is the identity, there's another field, a non-trivial field, which we call the logarithmic partner, and L naught acts on the corresponding state, just like with Jordan said. So the message here is, because mu, the twist field from which we computed the four-point function, is a perfect primary field. Primary fused with primary gives something which is not primary. So that is, as you know, maybe from supergroups, you have an irreducible representation, you tensor it with an irreducible, and you get something which is indecomposable, in contrast to what you get from ordinary Lie groups. There have been recent attempts to make this mathematically more precise. These attempts are still in a preliminary state, but what we try now, there are people working on this, is an algebraic approach on the level of vertex operator algebras. Here I recall a little bit what was known for some time, because, I mean, if you don't believe that this is the only way to define the operator product of these two fields with conformal weight minus 1 over 8, you can do it the hard way by defining the tensor product of highest weight representations in such a way that the central charge does not change, that is the fusion product, with the help of the so-called co-multiplication. I just give you one formula. You need several of them, and then you have to compare different expansions here. So that's one of the transparencies just to glance at, and don't worry too much about them. What actually happens if you do it in this algebraic way is that you find the same result. It looks a little bit different, though. So you find that the fusion product mu star mu is spanned by two objects which in some kind of tensor notation are given by mu tensor mu and a descent L minus 1 mu tensor mu. And L naught acts just in this case with this matrix on these particular states. And one can show that because the determinant and the trace of this matrix are both zero, that it is conjugate to the Jordan set. So we can actually go to a basis which I before called O and O tilde, which is given by this, which behaves just in the way seen before. So what we have here is that L naught acted in this way. We have, in this sense, two highest weight states in some way, building up a module which goes up like this. And this state is, in some sense, a cyclic vector still. So we retain this property that the whole representation, which is indecomposable, can be built up just from one state. So now comes one of the first transparencies in a series, which I call challenges. And this is what you really don't know. So we know that we might have more involved structures of that kind. So here's, again, some kind of logarithmic pair. Psi and L naught acts on it and gives you phi. But psi is not a quasi-primary field. I can act with L minus 1 or some power on it to get a certain state below. And on the other hand, that is not a true cyclic vector because I don't get this state from it. So this is a much more involved in the composable structure, and it's by no means the most complicated one. In fact, it's not known what structures there can be. In the sequels minus 2 model, we know precisely which representations we have, but generically, we are quite lost here. The second thing is, I mean, this is all defined with respect to L naught. We have now indications, which I will tell you in a few minutes, that there are indecomposable structures. I have erroneously called that Jordan cells here, sorry. Indecomposable structures with respect to L minus N, that means to a higher descendant mode of a Virasoro algebra, but not with respect to L naught. So that's much more difficult to understand what's going on in these representations. And as I already said, indecomposable representations are often not generated by a highest weight state. So we really don't have a clear picture what general representation structure is possible. So I go a little bit more to this algebraic approach. There's a very powerful tool in algebraic conformal field theory called Zeus algebra. It has only one drawback. It's very difficult to compute. In case of a Siegel's minus two theory, Kausch has really succeeded in computing that thing. So we know that this thing has a maximally extended chiral symmetry algebra called W2333, and this is the algebra. Again, one of the sheets for completeness of studying it carefully on the web version then. There are several null vectors at level 6 in them. And okay, you can use now this to analyze what representations you have. Because I silently just sold you this representation with minus 1 over 8 as an admissible representation. Of course, you have to prove that this is an admissible representation for the conformal field theory. In fact, what one can do is one can compute a certain space, A of H naught, which essentially means I take a vacuum Hilbert space, and I throw away all the higher descendants, except a certain minimal amount of certain descendants. In the case of a Virasoro algebra, I just, for example, keep L minus 1 as a descendant, but I throw away L minus 2, L minus 3, and so on. It's a little bit technical to express that precisely, but what Zeus's work really implies that in the case of a Virasoro algebra, that cooks down just to take arbitrary descendants of, so to say, level 1, defined in this way, and look how they act on any arbitrary state in H naught, and so to say, that gives you O of H naught, and then you mod out H naught with this space from H naught and remain something. And if that something is finite dimensional, then this is called the Z2 condition. This implies that the corresponding conformal field theory has only finitely many highest weight representations. But that's all what it implies. It doesn't tell me whether there are intercomposable representations or not. Zhu has analyzed that condition very carefully, and he proved that, in fact, the irreducible highest weight representations of a conformal field theory are in one-to-one correspondence with the irreducible representations of that algebra. Think of this algebra as some kind of algebra of zero modes. The problem is only, so that is an associative algebra, but the highest weight representations of a CFT in this language, which Zhu defines here, are such representations that L naught is just bounded from below. They are not necessarily irreducible, nor are they necessarily generated by a cyclic vector. So finally, one can do that very explicitly, but it's very tedious for Siegel's minus 2, and that's the reason why it hasn't been done for other examples. This space turns out to be 11-dimensional, and its effect spanned by these states. So in that case, due to the vacuum I take here, in fact, L minus 1 drops out, because that's a null vector, but L minus 2 stays in there, and the W3 mode stays in there, but nothing else, and certain linear combinations, 11 pieces of them. So this is, as I already said, the algebra of zero modes of fields. I mean, that state corresponds, of course, to a field. Modulo the zero modes of the null fields. I have just flashed at you at the beginning of this transparency written with Zhu algebra from the W algebra. So the constraints you actually get from NA and NAB, these null vectors, lead to this equation. And that equation can be further cooked down by applying the algebra, the W algebra itself, to this condition on L naught. So if you replace that by H, you see that there are only 5 possible values for the conformal weight, namely 1, 3 over 8 minus 1 over 8 and 2 times 0. I mean, you have to take that serious, very serious, that there is a square. That means that the L not, that the H equals 0 representation may be indecomposable because there is freedom left in this equation. So we had that Zhu claimed that there's a one-to-one correspondence with the irreducible representations. Now here we get an equation which lists all equations, all representations, but why is there a mismatch with the representations of A of H naught? So the conjecture for the general case, for the example here at hand, we know it, is that this algebra A H naught is not semi-simple. And that's actually an assumption somewhere hidden in the in Zhu's work. So what this of course triggers is the challenge that we should ask ourselves about what, how should we define rational? I mean, of course, one condition is that the number of irreducible representations should be finite, and the other one is that any representation is a direct sum of irreducible ones. That is what I call the strict definition of rationality. But the C2 condition gives only rationality if this, it's not true in the strict sense, only if I further assume that this algebra A of H naught is semi-simple. Otherwise, I can have indecomposable representations. So this is proven for C equals minus 2. We know it, so to say, by indication, by explicit results on the representations of the C1Q quotation minimal models. So we have strong indication here, but we don't know anything whether this conjecture is true. So? Yes. I think so, yes. I mean, the character of the one minus 1 over 8 is a very innocent thing.
What is not
innocent? The vacuum character. Remember that what we studied is the Zhu algebra on the vacuum representation, and it's the vacuum representation of the field which makes the trouble. That's what's so strange. You take a minus 1 over 8 field that is completely innocent. It's a primary field in the best sense. It has an innocent character. But its fusion rule with itself gives you the vacuum and something indecomposably connected to the vacuum, and that makes the trouble. And this is, I mean, we know it's almost for sure here, but we don't have any idea about more general logarithmic conformal field theories. So what is needed is a better understanding of the inner structure of the Zhu algebra. I mean, is it a semi-simple algebra or not, and what are representations it has? In particular, study what happens if it's not semi-simple. And we need more efficient methods to compute this algebra. I mean, C equals minus 2 is a very small model. It has only 5 representations, and it took 1 year on a computer to compute that algebra. So we really need more efficient methods. So just that you can relax a little bit, now comes why I am doing logarithmic conformal field theory, because I got a little bit interested in a very old work by Knitschnik, actually the oldest work where a logarithm is written in a paper as a correlation function. So, and discussed away immediately, of course. So what he had in mind is that he wanted to avoid computing string amplitudes in the genus expansion by complicated integrals over Teichmuller spaces, blah, 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 for each genus. So he said, okay, let's be clever. Take a Riemann surface. We know when any arbitrary Riemann surface can be given as some kind of branched covering of a compactified complex plane. So that looks, in this example, somehow like this. That's actually correct because any genus 2 surface is, in fact, or can be written in a hyperelliptic form. So, and now the next step is to say, okay, I put a CFT here, I put another copy here on each sheet, and then I try to find well-defined vertex operators. I mean, the difficulty is the word well-defined, of course, which simulate just this branch cut, the monotomy of moving around such a branch cut. And indeed, I mean, he proved that this is possible for certain conformal field theories, in particular the ghost systems. Furthermore, if all the branch cuts are of the same type, that means that this Riemann surface has an additional symmetry, let's say in Zn symmetry, if all the ramification numbers are n, then I can really definitely write down vertex operators which do the job of branch points. So I think, yeah, I don't have time, yeah, I don't, I can give this. So in the C equals minus 2 case, this can be done. So I mean, here I just give it as a Gauss system for C equals minus 2. The branch field, according to the construction of Knitschnik, is just the field we have considered all the time, which I call mu. And of course, I mean, we get what I have shown to you now twice and now the third time, two conformal blocks, one containing a logarithm. So the only problem is, now we look at the Gauss system, and I told you that the operator product involves a field, I tilde, the logarithmic partner of identity. Now I have a problem. The state corresponding to that field is just not contained in the Hilbert space spanned from the modes of the B and the C field. Too bad. I mean, something strange goes on. As soon as I consider two copies of this theory with this branch field, something strange happens because I definitely get fields and correspondingly states in the Hilbert space which are just not contained in the basic fields I started from. So what's going on? One way, not the only way, one way is to take, instead of B and C, two fields of weight zero, of course still anti-commuting, and if I mode expand them, I see that I have, in fact, now four zero modes instead of the two zero modes in the B and the C. So B naught and C naught are zero modes such that B naught annihilates the vacuum to both sides and C naught does not annihilate it to both sides. So that's conjugate to this. And now I have two pairs suddenly. And in fact, the I tilde then turns out to be that field, or as a state, it just contains two of the creator zero modes. And of course, you can get back your BC system by removing by hand the additional zero mode from the one field and take the derivative of the other theta field, and you get back to the original Gauss system. So you have to enlarge your Hilbert space artificially, and that works, of course, for other Gauss systems as well, and not only for Gauss systems. Here I present very briefly the case for C equals 20 minus 26, which is the Gauss system in the next level with spin 2 and minus 1. There we have, according to that formula, three zero modes. We still can introduce some kind of anti-commuting fields of the same conformal dimension, in this case minus 1, and somehow build out of them logarithmic partners of certain levels. It's not as easy as I have indicated it here as a sketch, because if you do that and you do the computations, you run into the problem that if you look at the fields or the corresponding states in the Hilbert space, that the energy momentum tensor is not any longer correct. I mean, it works, but it doesn't give you the correct conformal weights of the states. So this is the typical BC definition. So the solution, which is in this case here a direct solution of a procedure invented by Fjeldstad, Fuchs, and others, which is also a new result in constructing logarithmic conformal field theories, of deforming a stress energy tensor to actually allow indecomposable representations. And it all cooks down to having additional zero modes in the game. So the work works, this method works by adding to the undeformed pure energy momentum tensor expressions involving a fermionic screening current. Actually, the B field can act as such, and by hand, certain additional zero modes. You have to introduce them by hand. You enlarge by hand artificially your Hilbert space. That's the method of Fjeldstad and Fuchs. And of course, that this is not trivial means that you have to add further conjugate zero modes from which you can enlarge your Hilbert space. Like, for example, for each theta minus, you get a xi minus plus. So, and then still this doesn't work out, although in the case with the ghost systems, we now understand the origin of these additional zero modes, where they are not artificial. We just come from the fact that whenever you consider this case of copies of conformal field theories joined together by these additional vertex operators which simulate branch cuts, you see the zero modes in one copy of a CFT in the other copy of a CFT. That's the only thing you really cannot diagonalize in a very hand-waving sense. So this is where they come from. And this is how you get finally a consistent definition, because the full theory is, of course, still a tensor product, of course, somehow where the two copies are intertwined with each other. And the full stress energy tensor is, of course, the sum of the two of them, which the two different copies commuting with each other. The only thing why we didn't notice that in the sequence minus two case is that if you do that properly, you find that accidentally the second copy after diagonalizing all the monodromies turns out to be trivial. But that's only the case for sequence minus two, and this is why this went unnoticed for so long time. So we have to identify the additional zero modes on one copy with the original zero modes from the second copy. In the hyperelliptic case, and of course, if you look at other multi-sheeted Riemann surfaces, things get more complicated, and this hasn't been worked out, so there are the third challenges. That should be easy, doing this for ghost systems on arbitrary Zn symmetric Riemann surfaces. But, I mean, the construction of Fjellstad and Fuchs, for example, works very well for CP1 models, for all these quotation minimal models with empty conformal grid, which are known to be logarithmic models. They seem to work for Westermeier written models as well. That's not as explicit. I mean, they really consider that example. So is there a geometrical interpretation, as in the case of the ghost systems here? Can one generalize this finally to arbitrary Riemann surfaces? I mean, that's a hard question that has been pondered upon years, how to do tricks like that for general Riemann surfaces. And it leaves us with the question of the representation theory of higher rank Jordan sets, because, I mean, all the examples known so far have just a field and its logarithmic partner, nothing more complicated. Yeah, okay, so these are basically the geometrical origin of zero modes. I insist on that because I come back to zero modes very shortly. The next result I can offer to you is that we now have a better understanding of the general structure of operator product expansions in arbitrary, just generically written down or defined logarithmic conformal field theories under certain assumptions. So, I mean, by starting from what you usually do to fix such a generic structure, you consider the word identities on any correlation function, Lm equals minus 1, 0, and 1. But now let's assume that there are fields which are members of Jordan cells indecomposably. So then, of course, I have to modify the action of Lm by an operator delta Hi, which just moves me from the field generating one level in the Jordan block down another. That makes the word identities inhomogeneous equations, because this thing will replace the correlation function by another correlation function where I have fields which lie lower in the Jordan blocks inserted in some sense of a derivation. However, it's not too difficult to solve these inhomogeneous word identities in the hierarchical sense. You start with the easiest case and then you move on with a more complicated case. So, I mean, along the lines where you conclude that the identities were only non-vanishing one-point function in ordinary CFT, you say that, of course, only the highest member of the Jordan block associated with vacuum representation is the only non-vanishing one-point function. Okay, that's the easy thing. And for more general things, I must be honest and say there are, of course, a few assumptions you have to make at the beginning. As I told you at the beginning of the talk, we start with the assumption that the other members of the Jordan block are also in the sense highest weight states that the positive Virasoro modes vanish. Also, we have to define some kind of global rank that all the Jordan cells should at the beginning have the same maximal rank. I mean, it's easy to then to take a case where the ranks might differ by setting certain things just to zero. So, but we assume for simplicity that all the logarithmic partner fields are quasi-primary. That's just, otherwise we don't know how to compute at the moment. Because otherwise we cannot use the word identities. And furthermore, to have a starting point in the hierarchy, I have to assume that a primary field which is a member of a Jordan block, not to confuse with this twist fields like -1/8, a primary field which is a member of a Jordan block shall have a completely ordinary operator product expansion. On the right-hand side, there are also only primary fields. I would say we call such primary fields proper primary fields because they behave as an ordinary CFT. So what we already then know is that this is not true. I mean, not all the primary fields behave like this, but it seems, in all known examples, that primary fields which are members of indecomposable structures behave like that. So if we start with this set of assumptions, 2- and 3-point functions can be given explicitly. So, and they are written here in a compact way by getting out all the sums of logarithms and powers of logarithms by acting with certain derivatives with respect to the conformal weights involved in this term here. So that's the general formula for 2- and 3-point functions. And they, of course, define matrices in Jordan space, R by R matrices. And these matrices are happily enough invertible in case of a 2-point matrix, so that, I mean, the formula for the operator product expansion, except that now the structure constants are structure matrices with logarithms of Z minus W involved, looks the same. I mean, you just take the inverse of the propagator times the structure constants of the 3-point function, but now this is a matrix product. That's all. Looks very simple. Although if you really plug this in and do your computations, you get quite nasty expressions. So now I come back in the last 8 minutes or so. Is this right? To the question of a zero mode. Because if you analyze what I just told you about the generic structure of operator product expansions, we get a structure like this. So we get certain constants times the typical Z minus W singularity times an expression which it will be a sum of powers of logarithms of that kind here. That's just, you know, FK1, K2, and top level K. The only problem is that there's no simple rule for a bound for K. It's in particular not just bounded by the sum of the levels within the Jordan blocks, which I have on the left-hand side. That's a little bit disturbing. We would like to have some feature like, for example, that if you have a conformal weight here and another one here, that you know that the singular part of the OPE is given by fields whose conformal weight is somehow restricted. So it turns out that the proper way to understand that in all known examples is to introduce something which I call the zero mode content, and which actually means that I count the number of creator zero modes, which before in all the examples I call xi. So these are the zero modes which do not annihilate the vacuum to the left and to the right, and which are of course conjugate to some true annihilator zero modes. So we count the number of such modes in the state corresponding to a field. So, and then we have a bound, namely that the zero mode bound, the zero mode content of the fields on the right-hand side and the operator product is really maximally the sum of the zero mode content of the left-hand side, and as smaller as that amount gets, the more powers you get in the logarithm. Okay. So, the theories I studied actually were fermionic in nature. We had anti-commuting fields. In that case, it is very sensible to have not just a zero mode bound, but you introduce a count of zero modes for the two fermionic species from which you build up your theory, and of course the sum is then what I call Z naught. In that case, it's quite easy also to go on and define some kind of zero mode content for these fields, which are in themselves primary, but they do create in the OPE the logarithms if you extend that definition to fractional numbers. No, the number of structure constants is limited by the total maximal rank of the Jordan blocks. No, I mean, it depends on the theory you consider. I mean, for C equals minus 2, we know that the maximal rank of the theories we consider is 2. There's not nothing higher possible. That's it. So, I mean, this we don't know, but we assume it's 4. For modular properties of characters, we assume it's 4, but this cannot be proven because that is a representation which is much more complicated than the easy case I'm considering here. So, in order that you get a feeling for this, I give as an example the zero mode content in the sequence minus 2 case. Of course, the identity has no zero modes. The logarithmic partner has this state which creates it. So the zero mode content is just 2. So let's see, there are fermionic fields which are created by the states where you just have one of these zero modes, which have, of course, zero mode content 1, but the fermionic ones are either 1 or 0. There are the twist fields, and for them, I actually see that the total zero mode content is 1. So this works. 2 twist fields fused with each other can give maximal zero mode content 2, which is just what the zero mode content of I tilde is. And how this works is you see that associated to these fields is a charge with respect to a current you can construct in this theory. It's just BC normal order, an anomalous current, but it is a current. So taking that, we see that the natural definition for Z plus and Z minus for the field mu is 1/2, and for sigma, this is the field which has conformal weight 3 over A, this is minus 1/2 and 3/2, such that the sum indeed in both cases is 1, and the bound equation given above is fulfilled. This works, of course, in all other examples we have studied, in particular in the CP1 models, and it gives me some rules whenever a correlation function can be 0 or not. So in this case, let's take an arbitrary correlation function involving fields from a Jordan block, fields which are just fermionic. I just use this generic symbol theta, which you think of like the fields theta plus and theta minus in the sequence minus 2 case, and twist fields. And such a generic correlator is non or can be non-zero if and only if. If it's just a necessary condition, not a sufficient one. If the sum of the total zero modes is an integer which is larger than 2 times the maximal rank of a Jordan block, since I count from 0 versus r minus 1. So, secondly, the fermionic Z plus content must be equal to the fermionic Z minus content. I mean, that's like with spins, otherwise that doesn't add up. And it must be an integer as well. And the fermionic content for the twist fields must be also integers separately. That is that are necessary conditions for G to be non-zero. And that opens up, that is the last comment I can make, that opens up a loophole to consider a more generic case, namely for fields where of Jordan blocks which have the problem which they are not quasi-primary. If this happens, it's still possible that we can use the same machinery, because if the non-quasi-primary remainder from the action of L0 on that correlation function does not satisfy star, then of course that must be zero. Inserting that field makes that correlation function zero. If this is the case, then we still can use the machinery we had. So what we get is a zero mode structure. Here I have just given an arbitrary example. R equals 4, the total rank of that kind in Z plus and Z minus, and Ln act somehow by moving us. Either we stay here or we move down. We never move up. And if it happens that we move down in diagonal direction, not just vertically down, we will definitely violate one of the star conditions. And in that case, it doesn't matter what happens, and we still can use our simple assumption for the conformal world identities. So this is some kind of BRST-like structure, which happens to be implemented in the zero-mode structure of logarithmic conformal feed theories, and I close with one more sheet of challenges, namely what happens if we would have hybrid fields, Jordan cells, but primary times primary gives some strange stuff. Can we, that means fermionic fields, elements of Jordan cell, twist fields in Jordan cell, can we do the same construction for parafermionic zero modes in the composable structures other than L not have not been touched here? General case of non-quasi primary fields where the star properties are still satisfied, and so on and so forth. You see there's a lot of work still to do in logarithmic conformal field theory. Thank you. Yes.
What about C equal to zero? What do you know about it?
Okay, what do we know about it? On one hand, we know that if we study a non-trivial C equal zero theory, we have a very involved structure of H equal two fields. It seems that we get the Virasoro mode, Virasoro field, two more or less fermionic fields of H equal two, and another one which somehow form an indecomposable structure. We don't know what happens actually in the vacuum representation itself. That's, I mean, on H equals zero level. We know that, I haven't told you about that. I mean, one can do some considerations with the help of modular properties. There's something called the modular differential equation. And you can compute that thing for the C equals zero theory, and that gives you four independent solutions for H equals zero. So this is why I said I assume that this indecomposable structure, as it might be, involves four different branches. They don't have to be indecomposable in one go. I mean, maybe there's one part you can throw away and keep another part, but there are four independent solutions. So this is all what at least I know about. I mean, Alex Nichols is around, I think, and maybe he knows more about C equals zero.
Slightly worried with my cough, but it's going to make it really loud. But my cough, yeah, it's going to. Okay. Maybe can I just forget it? No. Okay. If it gets too loud. Okay. Cool. Okay, well, thanks very much. So I'm going to tell you about some work I've been doing recently. For definiteness, I'm going to concentrate on the Virasoro degenerate theories. And I'm going to show you that there's some extra structure within the degenerate operators. And in particular, what you find is you find there's a special infinite subset of locally chiral operators within those theories. And they're ideal for extending the chiral algebra and building bigger models. What's actually surprising is that those chiral fields actually come with extra quantum numbers, and specifically they're always in these models of SU2 type. And I'm